On this Labor Day, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The most recent federal data on unionization shows that about 15 million workers in the U.S. were represented by a union in 2019. And amid the pandemic, unions are speaking up. The American Federation of Teachers authorized strikes if districts couldn't ensure teacher safety. Politico reports the pandemic has made some union leaders hopeful that it will strengthen their cause. Teachers and public workers, what effect has Act 10 had on your job since it took effect in 2011? What is the role of unions in this pandemic? We're at 800-642-1234. John Shelton is a professor of democracy and justice studies at UW-Green Bay, where he teaches and researches the past and present of working people, unions, and jobs. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate, and happy Labor Day to all of your listeners this morning.
Happy Labor Day to you, too. We are approaching that 10-year mark of Governor Walker's landmark law, Act 10, that severely restricted the power of public employee unions to bargain collectively. So what is the state of organized labor in Wisconsin today?
Yeah, so, just remind your listeners that, 10 years ago when Act 10 happened and, you had this law that really restricted the rights of public employees to collectively bargain, at least in any meaningful way. I would just remind your listeners that it did a number of things, but one thing they might not remember is that there was really a political bent to this, right? So, like, one thing I'll just remind your listeners about is that one of the things the law did is it prevented workers from having dues automatically deducted from their paycheck for their union, even if they said that they wanted to, right? So, like, state employees can get donations deducted from nonprofits sometimes. So, the rhetoric was really about, saving money, but there were these other things in the bill that really was about weakening unions. So I think we should be clear about that. So there was an enormous uprising. Workers and their unions didn't take it lying down. But the situation in the past 10 years has been one in which the political aspirations, to a certain extent, of the people, Walker and the Republicans who push for this bill, have been realized. So, a lot of public employee unions have lost membership, in some cases fairly dramatic. But I think for public education, and I'm sure we'll get to this, the outcomes have been pretty significant. So there's been a lot of teacher turnover, particularly as teaching jobs look more attractive in neighboring states. But the thing that I hear a lot from teachers when I'm talking about the impact of Act 10 is actually non-economic. What I hear from a lot of teachers is that what Act 10 did is it basically took these things that they were able to negotiate, professional development, what some of their, non-teaching duties might look like, things that would ultimately sometimes make them more effective. It took those things and made those decisions unilateral on the part of the administrators at their schools. And even if those administrators are well-meaning people, there's really been a situation where it's taken away teacher voice and made a lot of teachers feel very disempowered, made them feel as if they, don't have a say in their workplace, and, to a certain extent has made it more difficult for them to teach. So, there are some pretty significant outcomes from Act 10. But the labor movement is alive and well in Wisconsin. I don't think there's any significant local unions that have just collapsed in the mm-hmm. public sector.
And I think we just lost John Shelton. John Shelton, I'm not sure if you're, are you still there? Nope, we don't have. There we go.
I'm still here.
You're still here. Let me pause for a moment as my heart beats here. Let's reintroduce you. John Shelton is a professor of democracy and justice studies at UW-Green Bay. We're looking at the state of unions on this Labor Day, and we're taking your questions about unions. How has the pandemic changed the way labor looks for you? What could the state do to improve the state of unions or to decrease their power? Join in 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Ed now, joining us from West Bend. Hi, Ed.
Good morning. The biggest thing in 2020 is that organized labor has this bill in the Congress called the PRO Act, the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. It would totally eliminate legislation like Act 10 and right to work states. They would be gone. That bill came out of the House. Ms. Pelosi got that bill out of the House in January of 2019. And for 20 months, it sat and languishes in Senator Lamar Alexander's help committee, not going anywhere because of the diabolical nature of Mitch McConnell and Lamar Alexander. We would not have right-to-work states. We wouldn't be going through what we went through in Wisconsin in March of 2015, where Scott Walker lied.
And, Ed, I want to pause here and allow John Shelton to speak to federal legislation and the impact on right-to-work states. What is federal legislation like?
Yeah, so, you know, thanks, Ed, for the comment and the question. You know, one of the things that it's important to point out, American labor law is really complicated. So, you know, when he was talking about the 2015 right to work law, that actually impacts private sector employees in Wisconsin. So, you know, Act 10, of course, only impacted those employees who are government workers. Now, what's interesting is that, as he mentioned, the PRO Act would, you know, that this version of it would actually, I'm pretty sure, allow for a federal statute that would basically preempt state statutes like Act 10. Now, the problem with that is, and this is really interesting, back in the 1970s, there was an effort to pass a national collective bargaining rights for public employees, right? So Act 10 wouldn't have been possible had this law been passed, and there was a lot of momentum for it in the mid-1970s. There was a Supreme Court decision in 75 or 76, I can't remember the exact year off the top of my head, but it basically invoked the 10th Amendment, which is, you know, the amendment that says anything not enumerated in the Constitution belongs to the states. Now, this was a law that was about minimum wages, so it wasn't about collective bargaining. But what the Supreme Court decision said basically is that state and local governments, you know, have jurisdiction over the labor rights of their public employees. So were the PRO Act to pass, were it to get through the Republican legislature and then signed by Trump, That's a very iffy proposition there, of course, very unlikely to happen. It would be interesting to have the Supreme Court revisit this because it's quite possible that since that's the most relevant statute, that something like that for public employees wouldn't really hold up necessarily in the courts. So we'd have to see. That was 40 years ago, but I'm skeptical that even the PRO Act would do something to preempt Act 10. We probably need something to happen at the state level for teachers and other public employees to get their collective bargaining rights back.
We are looking at labor issues with UW-Green Bay Democracy and Justice Studies Professor John Shelton. What can you say about collective bargaining as we approach the decade mark since the passage of Act 10? How has the pandemic changed the way unions operate? What are you watching for from unions amid calls for hazard pay and more PPE, personal protective equipment? Join into the conversation about unions on this Labor Day. We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. There's more State Cap in just a moment with John Shelton right here on the Ideas Network. On this Labor Day, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're checking in on collective bargaining in America. Labor unions have traditionally been an effective way for workers to voice concerns about workplace safety, but many essential workers are not represented by unions. According to the Economic Policy Institute, just over 1 in 10 essential workers are covered by a union contract. How are you seeing unions respond to the pandemic? What effect has Wisconsin's right to work law had on labor in our state? What union actions are you following now? Join in 800-642-1234. We have UW Green Bay labor researcher John Shelton, who is our guide. So, John, let's fast forward to the pandemic here, where we've seen strikes over hazard pay, over low pay, over unsafe working conditions due to poor social distancing or lack of PPE. Where are unions in this pandemic?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting because, you know, unions that have, you know, collectively bargained contracts obviously have, you know, sort of automatically a little bit more leverage with their employers. We talked a little bit about, we were talking a little bit more about teachers and some of their demands. You know, in some places, you mentioned this at the very top of the hour, the AFT has basically said they would support safety strikes of locals.
American Federation of Teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. And you've seen really some particular locals, especially in Chicago and Los Angeles, you know, they haven't gone on strike, but they've basically been taking the stand that, you know, they're going to leverage this situation to ensure, you know, that schools open safely, to leverage the organizing work that they've done, the power they've built in their unions. And you know, in some cases, they're actually calling for very capacious things, as we're seeing, you know, particularly with the absence of any more federal relief for, you know, the COVID crisis. You know, there's going to be a rise. There already is a rise of evictions and food insecurity, particularly among some of our most vulnerable citizens. So in places like that, those unions are actually saying, you know, we're going to consider actually withholding our labor until the city does something to make sure that our students can be successful. But I want to make a more important point than just that. A lot of those demonstrations that you mentioned a second ago, some of those were led by unionized workers, and some weren't. Some were led by, you know, workers who undertook demonstrations. That I'm thinking about the Amazon protest that happened that really kind of started as a you know, grassroots effort of workers. And the key thing with unions, obviously, you know, collective bargaining helps. But what actually gives unions their power as democratic organizations is organizing, is having workers all take a stand together. You know, so that's why, to circle back to, you know, Act 10 for even just a second, the unions in Wisconsin that are, I think, most successful now are the ones that have continued to organize, continued to have workers, you know, basically joining together and advocating for common interests. And, you know, so I think we're going to see more of that in the next few years as things become more dire because of this pandemic.
I was looking at an online petition this morning that was created by Trader Joe's employees, and it was signed by more than 21,000 people. And the first line of the petition says, "We won in a way." And it goes on to say that while Trader Joe's isn't providing hazard pay to thousands of its workers, the petition itself did raise awareness among coworkers of the power of collective action. Can you speak to the role of these online petitions today?
Yeah, so I mean, I think online petitions are helpful, particularly with companies that are very conscious of their image, right? So Amazon, for example, is one of those companies. A few years ago, you know, your listeners probably remember all of the attention the Fight for 15 got. And, you know, that was really about sort of mobilizing public opinion. Workers at fast food restaurants and other places, there was a campaign called Our Walmart, you know, would do these sort of demonstration strikes. Your listeners may remember the Black Friday strikes that happen every Thanksgiving, sort of every year. And those were very short strikes. They weren't the kind of like open-ended walkouts that a lot of your listeners probably think about when they think about the labor movement. These were short, targeted strikes in order to demonstrate and embarrass corporations that are treating their workers unsafely. And so, you know, I think a petition like the Trader Joe's petition that you're referencing has that sort of possibility, right, to sort of publicly say, hey, you're shopping at Trader Joe's. Look at what's actually going on here. I think it's important for your listeners to remember that those 21,000 people, probably most of them probably not all of them were workers. Some of them, of course, were. But a lot of them were people in the public sphere who supported them. So I think that's the primary, you know, kind of benefit of those kinds of petitions. It's no substitute for the actual organizing of the workers, though, at, you know, who work for Trader Joe's. So, you know, taking action requires that all the, you know, a good portion of the workers at any given worksite are willing to take that action. And the key thing is withholding labor, right? So,
you know, when those workers say we're not going to work for Trader Joe's, it doesn't just embarrass them. There's a direct economic cost because they can't do business. So online petitions, you know, provide some sort of momentum for workers. But, you know, for organized workers to really be successful, they really have to organize.
We're talking with John Shelton, a professor at UW-Green Bay, where he researches the past and present of unions and jobs. John, I want to look at the aftermath of George Floyd's death and police unions, the role of police unions, because there were reports suggesting that the unions bear some of the responsibility for the violence perpetrated against African Americans. And critics say police unions are protecting officers who have abused their authority. Are police unions problematic?
Well, so this is an enormously complicated question. I appreciate you asking me this. We only have a couple minutes left. But, you know, there is a major conversation happening right now in labor circles about this very thing. So, you know, a lot of union activists are saying, you know, police are workers. They deserve to have the right to organize and collectively bargain like anyone else. A lot of union leaders right now are worried that by focusing on police unions, you know, critics are sort of wrongly, you know, blaming unionization when they should be looking at the bigger structures that enable some of the things that you're talking about with George Floyd and Jacob Blake, like the way police are trained, the militarization of the police, and the sort of political fears that mayors and district attorneys have for holding individual officers accountable. And a lot of union leaders are really worried because any attempts to sort of go after public sector unions actually disproportionately impacts African-American workers who are disproportionately represented in the public sector ranks. But there are people in the labor movement now that are basically calling on police to take some initiative in reforming aspects of their collectively bargained contracts that make it difficult to hold police accountable. So, you know, there are union contracts that have been negotiated that, you know, allow departments to erase disciplinary records or prevent departments even from publicizing records of police misconduct. And there are unions now that are actually calling to expel police from federations. This happened in Seattle actually earlier in the summer, where a labor council, the labor council there in the Seattle area, actually voted to expel the police union there.
Would police unions be part of the larger American labor movement? Are they included, or are they different?
Yeah, you're reading my mind, because that's where I was about to get to. There's always been this sort of tenuous relationship between police unions and other unions. So your listeners might remember that the police unions were exempted from Act 10. So were firefighters, but the firefighters union largely demonstrated with other protesters. The police didn't. But the complicated thing is only about a very small portion of police officers are actually even affiliated with organized labor, with the National American Federation of Labor, CIO. So, you know, the International Union of Police Associations is the only union that's affiliated. So, you know, you have some, even at the national level, some unions like the Writers Guild that are calling on the AFL-CIO to disaffiliate. AFL-CIO has not wanted to do that. They basically said, we're going to try to use our leverage to hold the IUPA and their members more accountable. But you've got to remember that the vast majority of unionized police officers are either in independent unions or with other national organizations like the Fraternal Order of Police that are not affiliated with other unions. So, you know, the question is basically like, you know, how do other unions sort of work to, you know, hold police unions accountable and you know, basically prevent the murders of Black people from happening?
Well, now here we are in our last minute, and I want to ask you, how are unions and their endorsements playing out on the presidential campaign trail?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously I think a lot of unions see this as a major moment. The vast majority of, you know, organized labor has backed Joe Biden. I think their argument is that the Trump administration has been pretty disastrous for working people. Your listener actually kind of hit on it. I mean, you know, the Trump administration and Republicans in the federal government have done nothing to support the rights of workers in either public sector or private sector. You know, so most unions are backing Biden. You know, and I think that the plan there is to not just basically, you know, support a political candidate, but say we need workers to organize in this country. We need them to fight to get their collective bargaining rights back. And that's actually going to transcend any presidential endorsements.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. And happy Labor Day again to your listeners.
John Shelton is a professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay. He wrote the book Teachers Strike, Public Education and the Making of a New American Political Order. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Representative Jim Steinecke, who's chairing a new task force to address racial disparities. What police reforms do you want lawmakers to act on in a special session? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more State Cap right after this news update with Representative Jim Steinecke right here on the Ideas Network.